I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of April the 11th, 2016. I'd like to call for a moment of silence, please. If we could stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Just a small housekeeping chore. If anyone has any electronic devices, we would appreciate it if you would turn them off during the meeting as they interfere with our sound system. Roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Oleson.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Paul Greeno. Here. Bonnie Onion and Mary Lou Stewart have both requested to be excused.
Okay. Call for a motion for Bonnie, please.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion is carried 5-0. I'll have a motion for Mary Lou Stewart, please.
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion is carried 5-0. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the oath of office for Police Officer Brent Green, please. Sherry and Chief are going to handle that, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Brent, if you could step forward for a second. I wanted you folks to see in person our newest police officer, although he's not new to law enforcement. Brent Green is a member of our community. His wife, his four lovely children, his brother-in-law and his in-laws are here tonight to help welcome him to the Blaine Police Department. They too are all members of the Blaine community. And it's important that our officers know each of the community members, just as it is important for us in government to know each one of our officers as well. I appreciate you being able to have Ms. Sanchez give the oath of office in the public forum tonight. So, Brent, if I could ask you and Ms. Sanchez to step forward and take your oath of office. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Chief. And thank you for Brent's family to come. We appreciate you being here. And it's a great occasion, and we look forward to Brent being with us for a long, long time. Thank you, sir. Okay, the next item on our agenda is audience participation. and Sandy Schabel wishes to come forward. Sandy, if you'd be kind enough to come up to the mic and state your name and address for the record, please.
Sandy Schabel, 9726 Vista Terrace, Blaine. And I wanted to, I don't know if the council members saw the letter to the editor in the Northern Light, but it addresses the sewer project for $350,000 coming through Lincoln Park. And it's talking about, I think I mentioned last time, we've only been in town for 4 years. I know there's a lot of history that precedes us, and this letter is talking about the promises that were made before and the debt that was incurred before by developers that don't follow through. And I think this is one of the things we're fighting with our LID, because this seems to be taking precedence over our over us. We're being charged for everything, whereas we, the city seems to have the money, $350,000, to go up through Lincoln Park, which ends up not far from where the sewer line ends on Allen Road. It also goes to D Street. So I just wanted to point this out and let you guys know that people are aware of these things. And, you know, we're the taxpayers. And one other thing I wanted to mention that really upset me last time, there was a few council meetings ago, we had gotten a letter stating that only modern septic systems would be allowed, anything else, you couldn't get a deferral. And at that time, it was stated, oh, we didn't know that said modern septic systems, it doesn't mean anything. And then last council meeting, we found out that everybody who didn't have a modern septic system is not going to get a deferral. I think that's not being forthright. And it makes me not trusting. I've only been here 4 years, and I've talked to a lot of people who've been here longer, and they're not trusting. And just like the guy who was here at the last meeting, I'm going to encourage that you guys be open about this. You know, don't try to hide it. It's going to come out sooner or later. You know, don't tell me you're going to let a modern set, you know, let me get a deferral. Well, there's no possibility I can get a deferral because I never had a permit. My septic system was put in before the permits were issued, as are a lot of the places up on Vista Terrace. There is no chance for a deferral, from what I understood last council meeting. And a few council meetings ago, we were told, no, modern septic system. We don't know how that got in the letter. To me, this is dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and saying something different in person. I don't like it. So, other than that, I still like Blaine. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate your comments. Next item on the list is Paula Smith. Paula, if you'd be kind enough to come forward and state your name and address for the record, please.
I'm Paula Smith, and like I was saying to Mr. Greenow, when I come to places like that, this, then I say Paula Walton Smith, because my family started here in the late 1800s. Hardware and grocery store, built beast. I sent a letter, to do with the dock is my concern, and the pier down Marine Drive. When I mention that family connection, I'm thinking how many hundreds of times have not only my mom and dad and my husband's mom and dad.
Paula,
and us,
could you get a little closer to your mic?
Thank you. How much, you know, how many times, hundreds of times, all of our families, just like all of your families, have been down at the end of the dock and enjoyed it and the memories and the view. And so my main concern is this discussion, and I understand quite a bit about it. Talked to Raven and several of you about the survey and so on that have gone so far. I'm really saying that I believe there needs to be a road to the end. The dock is big enough to hold cars. I won't say whether I prefer two-lane or sidewalks or any of that part. I'll leave that for later. But right now, I just want to say that I think we need a road. I think it needs to be accessible to all. And so I have been talking to people around town, and I have three places on Facebook that I can access people, and they have all been saying road. They just feel strongly. And there's the old fishermen that love to drive down there and look out, sit 5 minutes or 3 minutes or a half hour. I think that is the most outstanding spot. You probably all agree with me, it's an outstanding piece of property or out there on the corner of the United States, of the mainland United States. So to me, just putting a nice trail, walk, path, isn't appropriate to the spot that it is. And then for Blaine, I think it's an awesome opportunity. I have been walking down there more the last few weeks and taking pictures and seeing that the playground is being used, and that's great, you know. The whole area, I'm not as aware of where all the boats are on the left, so I park over there and so on. But that whole area down the right is really beautiful, the way it's been fixed up and everything. And it'd be great to finish up down there. So it's the road that I'm really here about. And I have had a few comments about the port, which I can understand you have to work with the port. And, the feeling that they need to pony up their share of the taxes that we've paid them on this. So I guess that's my main thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the work that you do as council people and all of you. I don't like to come to these things with an axe to grind, because I respect people that do the job. I don't like to be in the high position, but I appreciate you that do it.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address the council? Okay, hearing none, the next item on the agenda is written communications. Do we have any?
We received an email dated March 29th from Chief Haslip regarding the natural disaster training. We received the Inside Track newsletter dated March 30th from BNSF. We received an email dated March 30th from Sculpture Northwest regarding Sculpture Northwest Art News Spring 2016. An email dated April 5th from John Urich regarding tsunami evacuation. And a letter dated April 6th from Paula and Mike Smith regarding the Marine Drive alternative.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. We have approval of bills in the amount of $212,773.83 and approval of advance pay of $826.69. Approval of payroll in the amount of $534,668.51 and approval of council minutes for March the 28th, 2016. I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second. Motion has been made and second. Are there any other comments or questions?
Just one comment on the minutes. I think on the report from the senior center, that floor has now been approved. they're lining up the time that they'll be able to work on it.
For clarification, is there a change to the minutes, or you're just adding further information?
The way it's written is says work is currently being done. It isn't right now.
Sorry, so at the time the work was being done and it is now done?
No, it's not.
I'm sorry.
It was hasn't been started.
Oh, okay, thank you.
And that indicates that it's being done.
So how would you like to read, have it read?
It's being considered.
Okay, I will make those changes.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is carried 5-0. Next item on our agenda is council action items. The first action item is grant allocation for the Vista Terrace ULID 35. And Raven, is that going to be you?
Yes, sir. So, as you know, we've been working for some time trying to finalize the finances for the Vista Terrace project so that we can move forward with the final assessment. And then and I have a revised timeline available for you at this meeting, and I'll pass that out here when I'm done so that the folks that are from Vista Terrace will have that information, although we'll be obviously sending out another mailing. But as a part of the public process that has happened to date, both with you and with public work staff, you've heard and we've heard from those that are concerned about the cost of the hookup. And we have an opportunity with the grant money for the project to do something with that. Unlike what we could do with sewer capital, which needs to be used for public improvements, the DOE grant contract specifically talks about assistance with and I was just get back to my agenda item here, that it specifically allows for private connection costs, including septic system abatement and general facility fees. Those are things that we wrote into the grant, and as a result, we're part of that contract. So we have a choice that we want to give to you so that we can then bring that back to the community of how to approach this. One is to, if we apply those general or all the general facility fees, including the vacant lots with no homes, it pretty much uses up the whole grant. Very, very little to spare. But if we use the grant money to pay the GFFs for all the properties with homes and septic systems, and not potential lots and potential homes, there leaves a balance of about $40,000. And that money, because of the way that the grant is written, allows us to apply towards some of that hardship. So we have in here what the budget implications would be. There is no specific budget implication in that we plan to spend the or use the entire grant regardless. Really, where the budget implication will be determined is at the hearing itself. But in terms of how can we help those citizens, we have a couple of options for you here. One, to use the grant money to pay GFFs for all homes with septic systems and apply the remaining $40,000 only to those with hardship. Now, we don't want to start out with how do you define hardship. There are already state guidelines for how hardship is determined. There's an RCW. Has an income threshold, you have handicapped, we have senior folks that are already getting a discounted rate on their utilities. In our estimation, we're not exactly sure. We think there's a small handful of people, probably less than six, that would really meet all of that criteria. And if that's the case, maybe we cap it, and then if there's money left after that, offer that equally to the remainder to everyone. The other option is to use the grant money to pay the GFFs again to all the properties that have the septic systems and apply that $40,000 equally to the property owners without a deferral. As you heard tonight, there's folks that are concerned about not having a permit, can't get a deferral. So the folks that aren't able to get a deferral, that we're not intending to hook up, to offer that equally. And our guesstimation is there could be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 per property owner. We're not sure because we're still processing those deferrals now. So those are kind of our two top recommendations. And then the third option being to apply the GFF equally to all lots, whether they have a home or septic system on them or not. And that just uses the grant, uses up the grant funding and leaves the remainder of the options for the actual assessment role. So we kind of have talked about this a little bit. We've heard about some concerns about hardship. We feel like we have a grant that can help in a way that sewer capital cannot. So there is an opportunity there to respond, and we wanted to give you those options so that when we do meet with, we plan to have an open house, one more open house, before the hearing, we can relay the plan to the residents.
Okay, questions for Raven?
So the staff recommendation is to do 1A?
So the 1A is, again, helping the most with the folks that would meet that hardship criteria. And we're thinking that even if we did apply 1A first, there would still be some remainder for the remainder of the residents, depending on how many people qualify for hardship. It's certainly a lot less administration and much more expeditious to offer the same amount to everybody. But that is, again, you know, how do we define who and how we want to approach this? So really wanted your feedback on that, and we're asking for that in the form of an action tonight.
Question, if I may?
Question.
Okay, Dennis first, then I'll come to Paul.
Raven, if all of the GFF monies were to be applied to the assessments equally, how much would the assessments go down?
So the money for the GFF, the grant amount is $395,000. Okay? If we only apply it to those with an existing home and septic system, $354,000 would be used towards the GFFs, and it would leave this $40,000 remainder. In terms of what can be applied to the assessment and the assessment role, that is a separate action we're not asking for tonight.
But if you put that money in to the sewer fund,
right,
isn't that money then being going, you're looking at it as being applied to helping out in some way?
One of the options that we've discussed is applying the approximate cost difference between the original estimate and the final project cost, which we're waiting on one more bill to have a final determination, but we have an estimate of. That is about $3,000, and that would use about $180,000 of the GFF or grant revenue that goes to the sewer capital. But the grant funds themselves are being used to offset the GFF, not the assessment.
I guess I'm confused because I understood that if you take the GFF money,
mm-hmm.
First distribution, you're going to use all but $40,000. Isn't that going towards reducing the assessment?
That can be, yes. But the once it is applied, if we apply it all equally and we get the reimbursement, the full $395,000 for GFFs, it doesn't give us an opportunity to offer property owners assistance with hardship. We can't take money out of sewer capital to do that. So I'm not asking you tonight to make a decision about how to apply the sewer capital money. There's still going to be money coming in from those GFFs that goes to sewer capital. The question is, do we want to hold back 40 of the grant funds specifically for this private assistance, which is the only way that we'd be able to do that.
Is there any problem with, by doing that, we're running into some legal fine because...
No, because the grant, and that's exactly why we can't do it through capital and why we can do it using the grant. Because the grant specifically was obtained for this exact purpose, and our contract allows for that. But once it is applied to sewer capital, if we do all 60 lots and all of those GFFs are applied, it doesn't give us an opportunity to go back with this hardship assistance.
Paul, you had a question?
I do. Are there people in this area who have already connected to the sewer and paid their GFF?
There are people that have paid, connected to the sewer post-project. Nobody, I'm trying to think, make sure I'm catching this right. Since the project was started, I do not believe anybody has paid a GFF.
So that anybody in the area who has, in fact, connected to the sewer system would be entitled to have the GFF abated or not paid?
If it is post the start of the project, if they connected as a part of the original construction on 8th Street, that might not be possible.
And are there people...
Because those people didn't... Hey, that's why it's not possible. Okay, so the people that paid, if they're in the city, they would get reimbursement through the grant.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that. Right. That deferral goes away if you sell. That's correct.
I know one thing. This is giving me a migraine headache, this whole LID.
You know,
but help
we
me
have like, a really... unique opportunity here with this grant. I'm making you aware of that.
Yeah.
It's not something that we would be able to do with any other LID project using conventional financing. So while this is giving us all headaches and angst, I do want to express what a unique opportunity we do have.
Charlie, let me just ask you, help me out here. How many vacant homes are there without any buildings on? How many of them are there? We've got what, 60 homes now, or is it 57?
There's 7 vacant properties.
So in total, the potential is the total area includes 60 lots, and 7 of those have no homes on them.
That's correct.
Okay, now, if I don't have a home on my property, was I told at any time that if I built a home on there that I would have my hookup fees waived? Was I ever told that? Or I know we told people at the time this was going on, there was no hookup fees being, but we told everybody that that could change, that was possible. That wasn't a guarantee.
That's correct. If I
own a vacant lot in there, what are my assumptions? In other words, would I send a letter, or was I included in any of this stuff?
I think our communication has always been that we have an alternative between GFF or hookup assistance. We did the poll. The poll indicated a preference toward the GFF, and we also saw it as the best way to apply the money equally. I I certainly don't recall in writing, nor do I recall ever guaranteeing that every vacant property as well as a property with a septic system would get their GFF waived. And if I'm incorrect, there's a few people here who have been to those meetings, but that's my recollection. Yeah,
I'd like to be confirmed that we didn't send them a letter telling them that, you know. Now, if I have a vacant lot and we go along with your suggestion number one, mm-hmm. when I build my house on that vacant piece of property and I want to connect to the sewer, am I going to have to pay the hookup fee?
Yes.
Okay.
When you build your house and you put in your sewer, yes.
And again, I'd like confirmation that at some point somebody wasn't sent out a letter that said, you know. Now, is that vacant lot going to have to pay for the sewer line right now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All righty. You know, we've talked about this numerous times. And I'm in favor of the number one, and that allows that $40,000. Now I got a question regarding the $40,000. If we do A, okay, we got $40,000. We do the number one, okay. We got $40,000 left over, and we're going to say hardship. How do we have an estimate that if people apply that are eligible for the hardship, that we would not be spending more than $40,000?
Our thought was putting a cap on the amount depending on the number of people that that qualify. We're thinking that at this point we know of two, and we're thinking there maybe could be three or four more than those two. So if you had, you know, say you had four people and we capped it at $5,000, which should cover a pretty good, and they would need to show that it cost at least that much, we wouldn't be giving $5,000 away, it would be reimbursement. You would still have $20,000 left to help equally with the remaining property owners. That we were thinking there might, because of the fact that there are a limited number of people that would qualify as hardship, that there could be very likely a hybrid of 1A and 1B as a result.
Question. Go ahead.
Clarify for me, if you would, the following. If somebody owns a house out there currently, and if we agree to abate the GFF fees, what fees are left for them to pay?
If they are getting the GFFs paid through the grant?
That is correct.
There is no GFF, period. It's
no GFF, but there are other costs associated with connecting to the sewer.
There are costs of the private piping and the septic tank abatement.
And I realize that this would be different for each house, but give That's me right. a horseback estimate as to what it might cost. Give me a range.
A range of $1,500 to $4,000, $5,000.
Thank you.
That's if you don't need
yes,
a
Charlie.
Pump and all that.
So I'm in favor of the money, but I definitely don't think you should be giving GFS to the cost.
Okay. Harry again.
Yes, Paul.
I agree with Charlie, and I argue that we should not be giving abatements to vacant lots, because if a person is building on a vacant lot now, before the sewer line got up there, they would have built into their budget the cost of building a septic tank. If we abate the GFF for them, we are in effect subsidizing them by the amount of the GFF.
That was our feeling as well. And I'm just looking at our communication since the poll came back on the GFF, and there's no letter, there's nothing in the following letter the only other letter that we sent out that indicates any promises were made, sir.
Raven, one question on number two, it says the money goes to the sewer capital reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what could it be used for?
So, and that kind of ties to the original line of questioning. The sewer capital reserve and the money that goes into capital reserve can be used to do anything relating to the operations and management of our sewer system. One of which things can be to pull back some of the added costs, the cost difference between the original assessment and the final cost. That is a valid thing to come out of the sewer capital reserve, just like the, one of the comments that was made here was that we're paying everything. Well, actually, the city has absorbed already the cost of the component of the sewer system that brought it up 8th Street. We've already decided we're not going to add that to this assessment because it's been, 4 years or whatever since that was built, and the sewer funds already paid for that.
And if we were to run a line through Lincoln Park,
yes, sir,
we would expect that to be paid for by anybody connecting up to that line.
Yes, sir.
And that would, in turn, over a period of time, be repaid.
Yes, sir. And okay. It's
so they're not, we're not giving any to anybody.
Our goal is to gain more connections, and in order to gain more connections, yeah, we need to at least put the pipe through our own property. Okay. That's the only way we're going to see any potential reduction in our sewer rate.
Am I correct in assuming the way this has been presented to us that the question of what we do with funds that are in the sewer fund is for another day?
Yes, sir.
That's another decision.
That is another decision.
And you will come back to that and we'll address this.
And right? Part of the hearing process.
Okay,
yes.
And this is really only to deal with this grant money.
That's correct. We want to respond to the public and also bring you the most accurate picture as possible before the hearing.
Question?
Yes, Paul.
You used the word assessment. What are the components of the assessment?
We're not talking about the assessment.
Well, we are talking about the assessment because we're talking about how much money people who own houses up there might be expected to pay out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, there are two costs and possibly three. One, the GFF, which we're talking about abatement. Two, the cost of piping from the sewer to the house. And three, possibly, an assessment on top of that.
So that's correct. The assessment is the amount that the property owners will be paying towards the cost of the LID. The LID is the public part of the sewer. The GFF and the hookup costs are both private. And
fair
that's
enough.
Where this grant is very unique.
I understand that.
Okay.
Can you give me a horseback estimate? And I understand that there's still a bill outstanding, but just a rough horseback estimate as to what the assessment might be.
The assessment as estimated was in the range of $12,000 in the estimate. The assessment as still projected, and we're waiting on, like I said, the final bill, is about $15,000.
So that if we were to use this grant to abate the GFFs, the homeowners would still be expected to pay the private hookup costs from the sewer to the house, mm-hmm, and the assessment of for a total out-of-pocket expense of perhaps $15,000.
Yes.
Perhaps. Thank you.
Okay. Now, dealing with just the grant money.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for Raven? Okay. Now, we've got staff. Here's the recommendation. Staff identifies the following alternatives and requests council direct staff to proceed with requesting grant reimbursement for one of the following options. Number one, use the grant money to pay GFFs for all homes with septic systems and apply the remaining approximately $40,000 to either A, assist those with hardship as defined by state local requirements, or B, assist with homeowners' hookup fees equally, except those with deferrals. staff indicated that they recommended A. Number two, use grant money to pay the GFFs for all properties within the ULID equally, including vacant lots, and direct the full amount to the sewer capital reserve. Now, you're looking for a motion, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would anyone care to make a motion?
I move that we do recommendation 1A.
Okay. Looking for a seconder? I will second that motion. Okay. Any questions or comments regarding that motion?
Yeah, I do have a question, if I may.
Yes, sir.
You may rule that this is not directly addressing the motion, but I'll try it anyway. You may argue that this is not addressing the motion, but I'll try it anyway. What history of this assessment has the figure that the homeowner's been given always been in the $12,000 range on the assessment?
The figures that we have been providing property owners since that original estimate has mostly been on a range and on a monthly range, when the actual assessments will ultimately be annual unless they pay up front. So it's not really apples and apples. I can certainly pull up the slide. At our last city council question and answer, we did show a slide that had what was originally estimated and what has been discussed.
I don't want to put you to that effort, but okay. If you could give me perhaps a horseback estimate.
I'm pretty sure that when the LID poll was sent out about how the grant monies would be preferred to be distributed, I believe we gave a range of something like $58 to $86 a month. And, you know, so multiply that by 12 and then multiply that by 20.
Okay, thank you.
Since we're on this topic, I know it probably doesn't apply to this motion, but I'll ask it anyway, like Paul. When we talk to the folks up in Vista Terrace, and we talked to them that they were going to have to pay an assessment, did we ever explain to them that regardless of whatever numbers we were going to gave them initially, that we were going to be stuck with an actual number and that we were going to expect them to pay that actual number? In other words, did we walk in and say, hey, if we did this today, it was going to cost you $10,000. However, we don't know what it's going to cost when we actually do it. Mm-hmm. And whatever that cost is, we expect you to pay it. Mm-hmm. Did we ever say that to them?
Well, I was not there, so I can't speak to what was said, but I can tell you that the documents are all on our website and that everything that I have seen in those documents refers to the originally proposed numbers as an estimate. And certainly all of the resources relating to the state law and LIDs and so forth has been communicated on numerous occasions. However, I would say that it doesn't specifically address the decision tonight relating to the grant money.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is very, very
I'm way off topic, and I apologize for that. But as I say, there are a lot of questions that we all have.
So I'd offer one other thing relating to your decision this evening, and that's, as I indicated when I was speaking, depending on if the council goes with 1A as the preference, we still feel that there's a hybrid potential. So if that helps in your decision making tonight, again, it's going to depend on how many people actually apply for the hardship, but based on what we know of the tax roll and who's getting the special rates now and whatnot, we think that there could be an option for 1A and 1B to be a little blended.
Okay, now just one more question for clarification. On this grant money.
Yes, sir.
I own a piece of property. I own a home in Vista Terrace.
Mm-hmm.
I have a modern septic system. I like it. And I'm going to keep it as long as I possibly can. Somewhere the city has got money in a fund that when I eventually, which might be 25 years from now, 30 years from now, decide to hook up to the sewer system, there is going to be money in this fund that I will be able to use to pay my GFFs. Is that correct?
The GFFs will be paid. It's going to be on record with that piece of property, GFFs.
And even if it's 50 years from now, which I doubt. But.
So the distinction in what you're asking tonight that I want to make sure is really clear is that if you're one of those property owners, and I think of all the deferrals so far, they're just starting to come back from the health department. We know of two confirmed that will be granted so far. Those two property owners with their homes, whenever they connect, will never need to pay a GFF. However, based on the decision you make tonight, they will also not be eligible for any assistance with their hookup fees in 20 years, because that is for the people that are not getting the deferrals. We can't hold that grant money for 20 years. Does that make sense?
No, explain to me it again. I want to make sure I understand.
Just for the properties that you described, someone who does not need to connect, that has a brand new septic system or what, however you want to work, permitted, meets all the requirements by the health department. If they connect in 20 years, they won't have to pay a GFF, but there will not be grant money available to help them with their private connection costs as we are offering to the rest of the people.
So you're guaranteeing that if my GFFs will be paid.
That's right.
But my hookup, my hooking up to the line is going to be my expense.
That's correct.
And I'm going to have paid my assessment, and I'm going to have paid my monthly. Now, if I don't connect up to the sewer line, I don't have to pay the monthly fee. The monthly fee is only, for usage, is only applicable when I'm connected. Is that correct?
The monthly sewer charge.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay.
You got it.
Yes. 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 Including the vacant homes have to pay the assessment. Okay, we've got a motion on the table. It's been seconded. Are there any further comments or questions? Could I call for the vote, please? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed?
I am.
Opposed.
Two opposed and three in favor. Is that correct?
That is.
Paul, myself, and Charlie, so there is a motion carried 3-2, is that correct?
And to confirm that is that it was Charlie and Paul that opposed.
No, I agree.
No, it was Steve and Dennis opposed.
May I ask a question?
Okay, the motion, motion has been carried 3-2. Okay, yes, you can ask a question.
And again, if I'm out of order, please tell me. But since neither Stephen nor Charlie spoke against the motion, I'd be curious to know their reasons.
Charlie? Dennis.
I'm sorry, Dennis.
That LID was run for 60 properties. And I think we're looking at a problem if we start deciding that some of those properties don't qualify for whatever reason.
Okay. Thank you. That's adequate. Thank you.
Steve, do you have any comments? Or?
Yes, I feel that the GFF should be waived, considering that when this program was started, there was no hookup fees. A lot of the citizens up there feel that that's what they were promised. Doesn't document it necessarily, but that's the way they feel. I think they should be waived in good faith, and that the grant money go to reduce the assessment.
Okay. The one point I'd like to clarify on that, and you can go back to the website. Everyone was clearly put on record that we could not guarantee that the GFFs would be waived. We said that could change at any time.
There was never, again, I was not there, but you can look at the record and...
That was a council meeting.
Yes.
And
I mean, I was not there, so I don't want to speak out of turn. It is a recorded meeting, and I believe that our city manager listened to the record before the last meeting, and we've had considerable dialogue on that particular fact. So I'm comfortable just in the sense of that discussion, but not because I was there.
And in effect, we have waived the GFS by using the grant money for this purpose.
Yes, sir. All the homes with septic systems will all be waived.
Yeah. Now, at any time in any of our records, did we advise people that if we got a grant, that we would use that money to reduce their assessment?
The grant monies themselves cannot be used to reduce the assessment. Only the super capital funds can be used.
But that's not my question.
We aren't taking action on that today.
Yeah, no, I know that. But
okay.
This motion, we just got you on the floor. My question is, at any time were people advised that live in Vista Terrace that we were going to seek a grant to reduce their assessments?
The grant was always communicated as to help with hookup fees and the cost of the GFF. And the assessment and the discussion of reducing assessment has not occurred.
So at no time did we ever say that we were going to go and seek a grant to reduce their assessment. Because we never wrote for an assessment. We never wrote for a grant to reduce the assessment.
No.
We wrote for a grant to reduce the GFFs.
What our intention in going for the grant loan combination was to try to reduce the interest. So if you want to interpret that as reducing the assessment, that would be a stretch, but accurate. As you remember, when we were initially looking at this, the financing charges were very, very high. But your action tonight does not mean that you can't money to reduce these.
I know that. Okay. I know that. But this. Okay, is everybody happy?
Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to the next
item. I can beg your pardon just long enough to hand out this revised timeline just while these folks are here.
Okay.
And we ended up needing to push the public hearing into next month. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay,
and
that's good.
Major.
Thank you. So the next item on our agenda is going to be the Marine Drive Reconstruction Alternative. Michael, is that going to be you?
Yes, sir, it is. But Raven is also available to answer questions that you might have. That could include her. I'd also point out that Sylvia Goodwin with the Port of Bellingham is here if you have further questions for things which the port has discussed.
Thank you, Sylvia, for being here.
The item here is one that we already had a study session on a couple of weeks ago, so we went through a pretty lengthy presentation on that regarding what the alternatives are. We also have brought this up a number of times as we've moved along so that you've seen these a few times. So I'll just go through it relatively quickly. There are essentially four alternatives. Alternatives 3 and Alternatives 4 have an A and B option, so there are more if you look at it from that perspective. But there are essentially four options. One is a full two-lane road, it's described as. The other is a slightly narrower two-lane road. The third option is a one-lane road that could be managed in a variety of ways. It could be that it's for one-way traffic. In other words, it would be a one direction would yield to oncoming traffic. Or it could be a scenario where it's just for ADA access, or it could be ADA access and the drop-off kind of parking so that people could bring a kayak down there or crab pots, pick up their stuff when they're done. And so there's a number of ways that can be managed, but essentially it's limited parking and limited traffic out onto the pier. And then the fourth option is the bike pedestrian alternative, which would be basically using some of the areas for landscaping so that there are some places to put benches along the way and creating a walking promenade to get out onto the pier. In that scenario, parking would be constructed, and in the alternative 3 probably as well, the parking would be upgraded in the area near the Starfish fish cannery operation in the existing asphalt area. So most people would walk from that location if they've driven down to the area. Others would obviously maybe be on a longer walk and might be coming from somewhere farther away. So the first two alternatives with the two-lane traffic are really very similar to each other. So while I say there are four alternatives, one and two are very similar. Three is different, and then four is the limited to pedestrian and bicycles. And there are, on the second page of your request for council action, there are some preliminary planning level budget estimates. The most expensive alternative is the full two-lane road. Coming in a little bit below that is the narrower two-lane road. And then the prices come down a bit, with the least expensive being the bicycle pedestrian option with the riprap slope on the inside, which is the harbor side, which would mean not building a new bulkhead, but instead replacing the bulkhead with riprap. And that's what that alternative is for both 3B and 4B. The bicycle pedestrian options were evaluated with surfacing, concrete surfacing, so the prices could probably be reduced further if we decided to use asphalt surfacing for that. So that's why those are asterisks, with the possibility that they would be less. The environmental implications of the different alternatives are somewhat varied. The options where cars are allowed out on the dock has a greater environmental effect, because the vehicles do have a tendency to drop chemicals, hydrocarbons, they leak oil and things like that. That's fairly typical. Even the best of our vehicles, when they're eventually get older, they will tend to do that. And there, of course, that tends to go right in the water, or it lands on the wood and potentially gets washed into the water. It doesn't really have a stormwater management capacity out on the pier. So that's one challenge. The other is any of these alternatives which require fill involve an environmental impact related to that, where there's fill into the tide flats. Not necessarily the most high-valued marine environment, but it is a marine environment, and that will cause a more difficult challenge in the permitting process. So those are some of the effects there. Now, of course, there are other management options. With the two-lane road, everyone can come and go. You have lesser of a walking area, but you have more of a driving area. With a one-lane road, you have to decide how that's going to be managed. Maybe there will only be limited parking on the pier. Maybe there'll be more parking on the pier. Maybe it will only be open to ADA access. Maybe it would be open for ADA and for people to do drop-off and pick-up. And then, of course, with the bike pedestrian option, it eliminates people from driving out onto the pier except for maintenance issues or maintenance circumstances like taking out the trash and such. and so that limits people's access. So there are a variety of different implications depending upon which option goes. The Park and Cemetery Board evaluated this. This is a little bit kind of outside of their typical thing. They are usually weighing in on directly park projects, but their mandate does include parkways and boulevards is included in their mandate in the code. So they did provide a recommendation, and they selected alternative two, which is the full two-lane, or excuse me, which is the narrower two-lane road option. As I reported at our last study session, we did a fair amount of public outreach on this, had a number of public meetings. There were comment cards available at the library, City Hall, Senior Center, and at the port offices. We had an online survey. People were, of course, able to write letters. We've gotten a couple of those recently. And we basically came up with a preference there of alternative four, depending upon which way you summarize, whether one and two are the same, really, or not. It comes up with a preference, nonetheless, for alternative four in the public opinion that we've received. The Port Commission has evaluated the alternatives, but they haven't taken action yet. And so they have, based on comments from Sylvia and her assessment of their conversations, there seems to be consensus for option 3B, which is the one-lane road with the riprap slope. My understanding is that because that does allow people to drive out there, there would still be access for at least at a minimum ADA access, and the riprap slope is potentially a less expensive alternative for construction, which is positive. City staff, our alternative that we recommend after evaluating the pros and cons of the different alternatives is alternative four. That's primarily due to the lower cost of construction and the simpler permitting, as well as the reduced environmental impacts. Of course, long-term maintenance is reduced with the smaller paving surface and smaller area and without having a bulkhead, so that's also beneficial. There's not a real easy option. You typically have given us a lot of direction to be fiscally conservative. Alternative four is the fiscally conservative option. And it's part of my job as the CEPA official, and I've gotten direction from councils to look at the environmental impacts and be conservative in that regard as well. So alternative four is what we're proposing. However, you can see, obviously, there's a fair amount of other opinion on that.
Go ahead, yes.
Michael, on the handout we got for this, it says the Wharf District Plan, which was adopted both by the city and the port. And then in the last sentence of that, it talks about a bike pedestrian facility and a traditional roadway. So I guess in terms of the proposals, 4A and 4B would not meet that plan, is that right?
Well, this, what we're doing now, meets that plan, I would say. The way that the plan is drafted is, it says that the decision at the time of that plan in 2005 or 6 was not being made. It was leaving it on the table that it could either be a linear park, bicycle pedestrian access, or it could be a road. And so we've come now years into the future, and at this time we're considering both of those alternatives. So none of them will meet both of them, but we are meeting the plan by doing what the plan says, which is to consider both alternatives.
I guess I don't read that as one or the other. I read them as they both should be there.
I'll have to ask you to take my word for that. Having the whole plan available when you're looking at this makes a difference in how you might interpret it. I understand you're just interpreting a couple of sentences there, but the plan says we've evaluated these different options. We're not deciding today. It was kind of left on the table. My guess is because it was a difficult decision to make at the time, and okay, it is a difficult decision to make today.
Charlie?
For me, it's not too hard of a decision. I mean, historically, we've always used the end of the dock, and I mean, I can speak for myself that it's part of Blaine's heritage and being able to use that. And we make it for handicapped access or drop-off or whatever it is, it's going to get used. And I think the potential use of the dock right now, it is being come close to what is being used. I mean, I think we need to work with the cheaper of the road alternatives, the 3A, 3B, whichever one of those work out. But I really, for the amount of money difference, I think we really should search out and be willing to search out for that extra money to do that, to do it right. It's a long-term process. Or long-term, it would last a long time if we get it done. So, anyway, I think we should try to get the road down there that has access for handicapped and drop-off, whatever. Okay. Or limited parking, time limits, whatever it takes. I mean, there's lots of things you can do to make it so that people can use it, more people can use it.
I'd like to see alternative B. I think it covers the needs of everyone. It does give you the vehicle access. One of the reasons I'm in favor of the single lane, I think it would slow down the speed limits I see down there in the past. That's always been a concern. At the end of the dock, there isn't a designated, gee, children are here, people are here, pedestrians. Mm-hmm. I think that would give the access to the people that can't walk or another way drive, but also slow the speed limit down. I think that would be a good alternative.
And that would be alternative three, sir?
Clarify just for me, which one are you talking about? 3B? Okay, Paul?
An ignorant question. For alternatives 4A and 4B, you have little asterisks next to them, and I don't see a footnote that corresponds to an asterisk.
Oh, my apologies, sir. The footnote seemed to somehow come out in my editing. That was the comment I made earlier where we believe that those two actually couldn't be made less expensive because these are costed out based upon using a more expensive surface, which would be concrete for those pedestrian walkways, so like a 12-foot concrete walkway all the way out. In reality, the engineering, the cost-conscious engineering would probably result in us using pavement, which would reduce the price on those. That was what the footnote was supposed to say.
Thank you.
Comment, Dennis.
Michael, I hear part of the question is, if you walk out there, you got your gear out there or whatever, is there any way that we could talk the port into constructing some shelters?
Some shelters on the pier?
On the dock or the pier.
Bigger.
We could probably talk the port into anything.
Good for you.
I'm sure there can be that kind of discussion.
Because that was a question that people raised, if I go out there and it's raining, I can't be in my car.
Right.
But I'd like to be out there to see what's going on.
Right. If alternative four is chosen, then you don't have that protection. You don't have the shelter. I want to say, maybe I'm just imagining things.
Isn't there a
shelter out there?
Yeah, but you'd have to stand on top of the picnic table to be out of the rain.
To be in there, yeah. It's not really adequate. It's certainly possible, and perhaps the city could contribute to those funds.
Even if you put up a plastic barrier type of thing so it was still visible, but you got protection from the weather.
Michael,
I never make it back when I'm walking.
Michael, the single lane road, I think it's somewhat attractive to me, but my concern would be a safety issue. Have we looked into any studies that have been done about using a single lane road? The WASDOT or any of these people have any sort of statistical data on what the safety is of running? And I'm assuming, again, my assumption being a single road means that there's no barriers or anything. You can just drive out, you see a guy coming, you stop, you let him out, you go in. But does that present a safety issue?
Yeah. Well, if people don't obey the laws of the road, it could, just as if somebody crosses the yellow line, it would create a safety hazard. The road would be designed wide enough so that two vehicles could pass each other. For example, if one driver was coming down and had the right of way and another driver didn't yield right away, didn't pay attention, and just decided they were going to go, it's wide enough two vehicles could pass using the shoulder. That's how it would be designed. The other thing that I would say is that there are a number of those kinds of circumstances where there are one-lane bridges that you'll encounter on rural roads where the person in the, you know, if there's someone on the bridge, they have right-of-way. Yield to oncoming traffic is what it says in both directions. And so those are fairly standard things. Obviously, that's not how we build most roads, or we wouldn't really get anywhere. Yeah. But this road doesn't have a lot of traffic. You know, even on a busy summer day, the reality is it doesn't have a lot of traffic. And it should
be
low speed.
But there would be signs that say yield to the...
Certainly. It's not just going to be free flow, do what you wish. It will be appropriately signed.
Well, just my comment is that I think it would be advisable to have some access to the pier. And that means I think probably with single lane road would be the least costly of those options. So I'm caught between a rock and a hard place here, but I think I would fall down and fall towards a single lane road.
Any other, Charlie?
I have a question. The bulkhead, not putting the bulkhead in, is the port okay with not with filling in that part of the harbor where it's, you know, where they used to have docks? Are you not planning on having any more docks in that part of the harbor anymore, or is that
Sylvia, would you like to address
that far? I mean, I'm just curious.
Okay.
Sylvia Goodman, Port of Bellingham. Our Port Commission asked the same thing, and we obviously would need to put a bulkhead in front of Sound Pacific, or Starfish,
yeah.
So that it would be deep enough that you could still get the vessels in there, and then once you get beyond where the vessels need to be at Starfish, then it could become a riprap.
But still, it goes out. It's going to limit. Eliminate all possibility of using it as a harbor.
It would, but that area is pretty shallow already. Partly for the last 30 years, material has come out under the bulkhead and filled that in. We haven't been able to put the float out there for the last 3 or 4 years because it's so shallow that it grounds. So there aren't really vessels using that area, and it's kind of choppy out there anyway. Most of the vessels are around the other side.
Thank you.
Steve?
Sylvia, I have one question. If we were to choose the port and us choose a bulkhead on any of these ones that has a bulkhead, what's the life expectancy of that? Where we, of course, like now one we see on the north side of Marine Drive, the riprap is held for generations and generations.
Well, I don't know how long that existing bulkhead is there. I believe it was built sometime in the 40s, and it's lasted 60 years. Well, it's actually been failing since the 90s, so it maybe lasted 30 years. I think it was built, the road was built in the 1880s. Then it gradually got filled in as a bulkhead, and it wasn't an engineered or designed bulkhead. It was just wood. And I think it was either in the 40s or the 50s when the port dredged the harbor and the bulkhead was built to support the road. And so it was starting to fail. When I worked for the city in the 90s, it was failing pretty badly. We were pouring gravel down that hole at least every couple of years, and it was coming out the bottom. So I guess that answers it. So 50 years?
Thank you.
Actually, somebody asked me, you know, that we were starting to build our sewer plant out on the spit out there, and they put in metal bulkheads into the ground out there. Is there any possibility of using that kind of stuff to?
It was like a sheet piling, but yeah. And then at one point, the city hammered some old guardrails down there to hold the stuff. So, you know, there's a number of ways. These days, though, when you have to get permits and follow environmental regulations, it's kind of difficult to do a makeshift bulkhead. You pretty much have to do a real bulkhead.
Further questions?
One suggestion, sir.
Yes, sir.
If you're making a decision this evening on this, you may want to forego A or B options and just choose 1, 2, 3, or 4, and that leaves a little bit of flexibility in that design related to questions like the Starfish access.
Okay, now staff recommends alternative 4 due to the low cost of construction, simpler permitting due to less environmental impact, and lower long-term maintenance costs. However, staff requests that the council select the city's preferred alternative
so that the staff can proceed with planning, design, and exploring fund options. We do have two council members who are not in attendance. I don't know whether it's important that they be here for that decision. So I'll see how the council feels about making a motion now or I'll suggesting that we delay it till we have a full council or whatever you, however you want to approach it.
I think we should just vote on our choice. Most of us seem to be in favor of one of them, so why not?
Okay. Does anyone care to make a motion as to how they, what their preferences are?
Well, I'd like to move that we promote alternative 3 or 3A, A or B, and A or B.
Okay. Is there a seconder for that motion?
I'll second.
Motion has been made and second. Are there any further questions or comments? Okay. I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. I believe the motion carries 5-0 for alternative 3. Is that correct? Okay, on to the next item, which is the Strategic Economic Initiative contract with Beckwith Consulting. Mr. City Manager.
Council members, Mr. Mayor, you heard the night during the workshop the presentation by Tom Beckwith regarding the proposed action we'd like for you to take tonight, which is approve the contract. You know, we've had lots of conversation this tonight about, you know, how the city's going to move forward with various projects, whether they're funded privately or they're funded publicly, whether we should put the utilities through Lincoln Park. All of that is about how the city's going to move forward economically. And so the purpose of tonight's motion and action on your part is to help develop a plan to do that. I think from my experience here in the short time, three years now, we've kind of searched around to see how can we get things going. People ask, well, why don't people come downtown? Why don't we start a new business? All of that leads, I think, to, you know, the fact that we don't have really have a strong plan. There had been in the past some strategic planning. They're many, many years old now. Certainly the BTAC committee works very diligently to try to provide activities and things for the local visitor and visitors from afar, but I think we need to take more of an affirmative action, put together a plan. So the proposal is really to put together a plan, not just a funding plan, but an action plan to start taking some things forward that would help our economic development activities. So the staff is asking council to approve the contract with Tom Beckwith. We heard tonight there's going to be many, many opportunities for the public and the council to participate in this project, and by June we'll have the first phase completed, which will be about the time we start talking about the budget and get some council direction on phase two, if that's what you wish to do.
Are there any questions? The only comment I have is that we do have to involve the public. I mean, we say we're going to, but I mean, we really have to make a very solid effort, because to me, I think this is probably the most important thing we're going to do in 2016. And I, you know, we really have to work at that. It's hard to get people out.
Well, it starts on the 19th. We've sent out invitations to literally dozens and dozens and dozens of people.
Yeah, I know.
Working to continue that effort.
I'm just saying that
we agree with you 100%.
It just is so important that people get in behind this.
Absolutely.
And it's a shame we don't have a sort of email list or something that we actively could
get
involved.
We have access to that list.
Yeah, you know, the support we got for the park on Marine Drive and the name change indicated that people can get involved. And I think the more people we can get involved in this project, the better we're going to be. So I would say just make every effort possible to get as much involvement as we possibly can. Paul, do you have any questions? Okay, let me read the motion here, just so that everybody understands. Okay, the recommendation by the staff is, staff recommends the City Council authorize the city manager to enter into a contract with Beckwith Consulting Group for phase one of the Strategic Economic Action Plan. Does anyone care to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and second. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Next item on our agenda. Thank you, Mr. City Manager. Next item on our agenda is the professional service agreement with Trantech Engineering for the design of Hughes Avenue improvements.
Well, good evening again. We're very excited to see this project getting kicked off. This is Hughes, the realignment at Peace Portal, and this extends all the way to Odell, and then it is our hope to still find money to take it from Odell all the way to the city limits with a at least a resurfacing. But the project includes over the WashDOT bridge, putting in pedestrian and bicycle improvements. We have the, as I stated, the realignment at Peace Portal, and that will be tying into the railroad. So it has a lot of complicated elements to it, a bit of risk relating to, you know, potential mitigation relating to the railroad, the bridge, and possible decontamination relating to some of the area that we're not so sure about, which is Mr. Connolly's, the corner of his property there at Hughes. We're not sure what we'll encounter there. But the engineer's estimate for this work was within our approved funding amount with our with the state and the feds. So while there is an initial cost to the city in terms of needing to pay the money up front, this is 100% reimbursed through our federal and state matching grant. So no ultimate hit to the 333 fund. So at this point, we're recommending that council authorize the city manager to execute this contract with Trantech Engineering for the design services in an amount not to exceed $447,084.58. This includes a management reserve of $44,708.46. Oh, excuse me, that is not inclusive. It is for a total maximum of, $491,793.04. And again, I do want to state that because this is a federal aid contract, we have included for your information the base contract, which is the first 14 pages. Then we have the consultant scope of work and their cost summary, but we did not print the remaining, 60 some odd backup pages in an effort to save some paper and headache. So if you would like to see the whole contract, you're welcome to look on one of our computer screens. But in any event, this gives you what you're approving and what it's for.
Question, Paul. You mentioned a map in the proposal, and yet I seem to have missed the map.
That might be in the 60 pages we have minuted.
That would have been on the very last page.
Okay. I certainly don't want 60-odd pages, but a map, I think the pictures, the map is always helpful.
I don't think our computers are good. Mine doesn't.
I'm the one who doesn't
have to. Let's not stop the wheel of progress.
Harry, I got one question when you're done. Okay, let me just see if that's been set. Or is this something you're going to put on the screen? Or
I wasn't, because we didn't turn on
the screen. Okay. All right. Okay. Dennis has a question, though.
Raven, I talked to you a little bit about the railroad crossing. And there's on page 22 of 31, they talk about the question of whether or not they're going to be within 4 feet, 3 inches of the signal base.
Mm-hmm.
What if that happens? Is that the city's responsibility to take care of that?
Well, one of the sub-consultants is someone that specifically deals with railroad issues. In our initial discussions, he did not think it was going to be a problem. It's just going to depend on who we're talking with and at the railroad to see what their requirements are going to be. But while we've included a contingency in here for this, we do not, based on that initial interview, we do not feel like it's going to be an issue.
But that road will go across the railroad tracks.
That is the plan. The plan's always been to, because of the realignment, to also try to address that side of the road as much as we can. If anything should arise through the design where that changes, we will certainly keep you apprised.
Raven, I got a question. We asked for a statement of qualifications from 8 firms. Well, we received a statement of qualification from 8 firms, and the review team selected TransTech Engineering as the preferred candidate. Any reason why TransTech Engineering was chosen? Lengthy answer, just sort of.
They have a very strong structural component to their firm. They have a local Bellingham office, although they're supported largely by Bellevue. They've completed a couple of projects with this similar proximity to the railroad. They had an excellent subcontract, like I mentioned, that had specific experience with the railroad. And I think just their approach to the work resonated with the interview panel.
Okay. Question. Yes, Dennis.
Raven, is there a time frame? Am I missing it?
So the intent is to start design this year, and it will depend on how complicated the permits get, but it would be construction in 2017 or 2018, depending on the permitting process.
And the other part of that is money has been set aside for the actual construction.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Further
it's questions? In the CIP.
Further questions? Okay, now. Staff recommends that council authorize the city manager to execute a contract with TransTech Engineering, LLC, for engineering design services in an amount not to exceed $447,084.58, with a management reserve of $44,708.46, for a maximum amount payable of $491,793.04.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, the motion is carried 5-0. Next item on the agenda is under council action items is the Gateway Property Brokerage Contract with Royal LePage Commercial/Remax Victory.
Mr. Mr. Mayor, we'd ask that the council defer this. We're not prepared to finish the contract tonight.
Okay. No actions required. Okay, so kindly delete that from your agenda. Okay, that takes us to the next item on the agenda, which is commission, committee, and board reports. First one is the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Mr. City Manager.
Next time we're going to move this over there. So I just wanted to briefly report to the council that Kenny did meet last week and had a chance to look at the Beckwith proposal we talked about and you approved tonight, and also talked about the contract that we will be proposing for brokerage for the Gateway property that the committee was recommending to the council. So those were the two items. We spent some time chatting about that, and I thought it was just always an engaging group, but that's really the essence of our conversation. Supervisor Olson was there. Council Member Olson was there. And
I like speak the supervisor. To
it. But pretty simple.
I've been called worse.
I've got old habits that are hard to break. So that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager. The Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee, Mr. Lawrence.
No report.
Okay. Next down to the WTA Board. The Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee.
Put the red tide back on in the harbor and the first day and spit.
Okay, so back red tide days, eh? Okay, Dennis, you have three. Any comments on any of those?
Nothing on the library. They had their rummage sale at the center and breakfast on Saturday, this coming Saturday. And Boys and Girls Club, there was no school last week, so nothing.
Okay, next is the Planning Commission. Mr. Jones.
No report other than just the regular items that you see on your list of upcoming meetings.
Okay, Park and Cemetery Board, Mr. Jones.
Nothing, sir.
Public Works Advisory Committee.
We held a meeting last Thursday, provided some input on the six-year transportation improvement plan, and we discussed the marine drive alternatives at great length.
Okay. Small Cities Caucus, we have a meeting
next week.
Next week. Watkin Council of Governments, that's coming up shortly. It's either this week or next week. And not last but best, the North Watkin Fire Update.
Evening, Council. Short report tonight. Just sharing with you our responder monthly newsletter. Interesting article in there on our new commissioner that was appointed on our board of directors. His name is Bruce Ansell from Birch Bay. And a little bit of history on him. And on the back, there's a good article on emergency preparedness relating to young kids and children. Interesting reading. So with that, I'll answer any questions you might have. Otherwise, it's pretty short and uneventful.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, next item on the agenda is department reports. First item up is Public Works, and then A, project updates.
Two of them. Oh, my gosh.
All right, I promise it's the last time I'm up here tonight. That's
well,
it.
We don't know.
Anyway, just quick project update. Got bids last week on well 8.1. I think I mentioned previously that we separated the projects, the two well projects this year, just in the interest of time. And so Stremler Gravel will be doing that, and the 5.1 project should be going out to competitive bid very soon. Mitchell Avenue, a project that encompasses essentially both approaches to the I-5 bridge and then the path up the Boblett right-of-way to Mitchell. That bid opens next week on the 18th at 10 a.m. And as I indicated at our last meeting, my whirlwind report, the plan is when school gets out to close down the bridge in the interest of time and finances. We're working with the police department, and we will be working with the local neighborhood in terms of the detour route and so forth. Today we had a water main break on Canvasback and Clubhouse Point, and that was repaired by 4:30 this afternoon, but that did have water shut down out there for the day. And I already passed out that Vista Terrace timeline change. I was going to do that here. And just to let you know that I'm working with the consultant, Tom Beckwith, that you just awarded on a informational flyer that'll go out for the TBD. So we're going to be kind of tracking the two side by side, at least initially, until one takes its own life. And then finally, and I don't know which council member asked, but had concern about the structural integrity of the Dakota Creek Bridge on Blaine Road, the state bridge. Was it you, Mr. Mayor? So we have been trying diligently to get that information from WashDOT, and I think the most helpful response that I have is from one of their project engineers. And he essentially provided me a link, and I can forward that to you, that has kind of a whole diagram of all the bridges in the state and their condition and so forth. He indicated that seismic is just one of the criteria that they use to review and program upgrades to bridge structures. That right now in the state, for seismic retrofit alone, there's more than 500 bridges that qualify. So the Dakota Creek Bridge, when compared to many of the others, is not as used and doesn't have the same traffic and so forth. So they have posted it, essentially, and that's what you see out there now. He wanted me to point out to you that the Dakota Creek Bridge has been rated not deficient, but obsolete. What that means is that it doesn't meet the current standards, but like I indicated earlier, there's more than 800 bridges in that classification in the state alone. So it's not a like alarm, caution, warning, danger type of thing. It is normal when you drive over the bridge to feel vibration. So if that is a point of concern, that is something that to think about. And obviously, when we see opportunities for funding, if we think that there's an opportunity for this, we will certainly bring it to their attention. But the state is, you'll see in Ferndale the next 2 or 3 days, I believe, that one lane on I-5 will be closed while they're checking the integrity of the I-5 bridges. So it is a part of their routine program to continue to inspect these bridges and make sure they're up to snuff.
Yeah.
And then,
I guess the question is, people who live on that side of the water,
mm-hmm.
and if there was an earthquake,
mm-hmm.
how did they get out from being on that side of the water to this side of the water if
right.
that bridge is no longer there?
Well, their detour route would be via Birch Bay Linden and heading in that direction.
And that bridge would be gone.
Birch Bay Linden's bridge would
be? Well, it goes over the highway.
Right. Well, I think it's pretty unlikely that every bridge in Whatcom County would come down in the event of an earthquake. Usually you have an issue, it's at an epicenter and goes out from there.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's a good point. Thank you, Michael. Michael was actually just pointing out, and I don't know why I didn't think of that, but the Peace Portal was just recently upgraded for seismic by the county.
Right. Yeah.
So you do have that alternative. Yeah. You go Loomis Trail.
So while I'm on that, where does the tsunami route go to? I see the signs. I never could figure out where to go. Where do they lead me to?
Where are they leading you to? Uphill. The fire station in Semiahmoo.
The fire station is the gathering place. The vast majority of Semiahmoo was all above the tsunami hazard area. The hazard is only on the beach and on the spit.
So I come out of Semiahmoo, I go where?
Where are you in Semiahmoo, sir?
Up. If I was coming from the hotel, where would I go?
You would go up the hill to the fire station.
Or to the fire station. But there are other ones going down the other side.
Going down where?
Drayton Harbor. There's tsunami signs on there. Where?
Yeah, I guess the easiest way, I we'd have to get a map out so you can see. But essentially, they just tell you to go uphill. It sounds outrageously simple, but the vast majority of Semiahmoo is uphill.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of people being very concerned about where people go if there is an earthquake.
You know, maybe we can put a link on our website to those maps. That would probably be helpful because, I mean, we're participating, but we're not leading the effort. Yeah. So I can understand why people could be concerned, though, when they're driving around.
Yeah.
Now, my final update to you is just to let you know that the state is preparing to do some resurfacing on I-5 in our area. They are going to be doing the work at night, and they are going to be using some of our roads as a detour. I will keep you posted as I'm able to provide you more information.
Okay. Can I make a recommendation on 274? Doug Erickson's no longer down in Olympia. I think it would be very appropriate if we arranged a meeting with him.
Okay.
And perhaps, you know, you're more aware of that than anybody. Perhaps maybe if you gave Doug a call and two or three of us could meet with him to discuss that, because I think it's very appropriate.
We talked about that earlier today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spoke to Representative Van Worven.
I think just suggesting him that we have a coffee and three or four of us get together, because I think we are all unhappy with what happened, and I think we should express it to him directly in person. And he should be home now.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Next item is the Community Development Services, and A is Enforcement Update.
Yes, sir. I will get to that in just a moment. I wanted to touch on two things. One, you mentioned earlier in regards to the public outreach for the strategic economic initiative, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you were saying. One of the things I would say to that in that regard, though, is that if you're in a community group and you say, are there any volunteers? Frequently you hear crickets. But if you ask someone, will you do this for me? You often get a yes. So in this, what we're doing is we're asking people who we have in our existing community groups, council, planning commission, BTAC, BDAC, the Semiahmoo Resort Association, many other existing community groups like that are not necessarily city groups, but they are community groups, to attend a meeting with Tom. They're getting special invitations, and then we're asking them to spread the word and help get people to come to some of the general community meetings, because you're right, getting people involved is critical to success. And it's critical to getting the right answer, not necessarily getting, you know, something built or something approved, but getting what is it that people want.
Yeah. The hotel is our number one employer, and I often think that we don't ask for their participation. So that's something to think about. That they're very active in the community.
That's a great point.
And we should probably be thinking of asking somebody from the hotel to participate.
And they do have members on the Chamber of Commerce who have been invited, and on BDAC. So that's BDAC. So that's a good point, though, I think.
Yeah.
The other thing is the tsunami topic. It seems lately that people have gotten very concerned about that. It is important to recognize that the vast majority of our city stands above tsunami hazard area. It would take a cataclysmic event beyond what people are describing is likely for a tsunami to reach this far into the Salish Sea and to be of dramatic height when it got here. That isn't to say an 8 or 10 foot tsunami couldn't do a lot of damage and couldn't be significant, but on the flats up here, we're well above that risk area. And even my house, which is like practically on the water, I'm literally only a few feet above a king tide. And if you're in my front yard, you'll be okay. If you're in my backyard, move to the front. So it's a very right now people seem to be very concerned about that, but it really is only the most low-lying parts of our community. Not to mention that we won't continue to get the word out and that sort of thing, but it's important that you know that.
Paul has a question.
Okay, so
actually a comment. If I make a comment to add some numbers to what you suggested, I've looked at the animation projects the effects of a 9.2 earthquake in Cascadia and the ensuing tsunami. At the spit, it's 18 inches.
Yeah. You're probably going to have more trouble with the earthquake.
Yeah, exactly. Not to downplay the tsunami because it's going to be a really big problem for a lot of people. It's just we're in a lucky to be in a very protected part of the Georgia Strait. So the enforcement update you have last, I think it's the last item in your packet, is the color sheet that's sort of a flow chart, if you will. There are 47 confirmed violations at this time, so that will be a changing number, right? Because things will be resolved and new things will be added. And what we've found is that as people have become aware that we are taking action and more things are being able to be addressed and we're sort of reaching out and asking for people to come forward with issues and concerns, we are getting more issues and concerns reported. So there are 47 currently, at least as of the end of last week. For those, 38 letters have been sent out to properties with violations. 17 of those properties have made contact with the city to begin working towards resolution. And already 12 cases have been resolved that are not reflected on here. Some of the things to be aware of, when you changed Title II, which established the unified code enforcement process, that didn't have the effect of changing Title 17, except in so much as it said this applies to Title 17. So Title 17's change we're bringing through the Planning Commission now to basically make sure we don't have any contradictory code. That would be very bad when we got to a lawsuit. So there are a couple of things we're holding off on because we don't want to create the body of record if we ended up in court while we had two different sets of laws. It would make it complicated. So Title 2 is what we're using. Title 17, we're just basically saying we'll be changing it to say refer to Title 2. The dangerous structures are in that category, and people who have violations such as like putting in a parking lot without a permit and on a gravel lot or on a dirt lot, that would be in that category as well because those are both land use type actions. And so those are a little bit slower to work than some of the others. Most of the things that people have cleaned up and are resolved and off this list are trash and debris and vegetation. So people cleaning up junk in the yard or mowing down fields, blackberry patches, that kind of thing.
Michael, would parking of vehicles fall under the danger structures or does that parking?
Parking of vehicles on private property without authorization. So again, it doesn't mean like parking your own car in your driveway. It means setting up a truck parking lot. That's under parking.
Yeah, and so like the Connolly property, you can't just park vehicles on a lot without.
Mr. Connolly, of course, is no longer doing that, but property owners are.
Yeah.
Have just opened what you might call renegade parking lots without going through a site plan review process.
The same thing that applied to Connolly is going to apply to them.
Yes.
They don't comply with the law.
Yes.
Okay.
And because we changed Title II and Title 17 lagged a little bit because we need to bring that through the Planning Commission, we're making sure we have the laws clear before we make that action.
Good.
The dangerous structures, again, that's another one to let people know if you have conversations with folks. That takes a long time. Yep. Some of the dangerous structures, we likely may have to go to court to get permission for the city to tear them down. That doesn't happen overnight. So that's just a good thing to be aware of.
We've had anybody get violent with us and say, you know, you shouldn't be doing this?
Everyone actually has been really pretty positive so far.
Okay.
Some people are concerned, I'll be honest with you, because they don't have much money to address the issue. So we're struggling with that in a couple instances.
But nobody has really taken offense to the fact that we've sent them a letter telling them that they're violating the law.
They're all really talking with Maddie, not me, but to the best of my knowledge and from the interactions I've seen, people have been very positive, and most all of them seem to recognize that, it is a problem. They're not generally saying those blackberries climbing over the back of my garage and eating up my whole backyard are okay. They're kind of like, yeah, I know that. I got to do something. Some of them have even said, you've finally given me a reason to do something. So Maddie has a very good way with people, and I think she's suited to this task.
Yeah, okay. Anything else, Mr. Jones?
Nothing else for me. Thank
you. Public safety. Administrative services. Can't forget administrative services.
No, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, let's see. Charlie, Dennis, and Steve all received copies of the mastering council meetings.
Yep.
That council members Greeno and Mayor Robinson attended with other staff. Along with that, I have passed out the basic rules of some motions, and on the back is the voting situation to help with the process. But I realized when I converted the basic rules from a Word into PDF, you need a magnifying glass to read some of this, so I'm going to redo that for you. And then I just wanted to provide an update on our emergency preparedness meeting that we had last Friday. And we had quite a few staff members attending that were available. And we're working on the process of identifying items that need to be taken care of, working on the website, training, et cetera, and we will keep you updated on that as we come along on that. And if there's any questions?
Questions, Bert? Okay, thank you, Sherry.
Okay, thank you.
Sherry, is Bob going to update the old computers for us?
Bob is working on that. Actually, we're taking a look at maybe providing iPads or Surface or some other form of equipment.
Apple Watches would be nice.
Pardon?
Apple Watches would be nice.
Would you like? The other thing, too, is if there's any council member who would like, has a smartphone or a tablet that would like, who would like the Good for Enterprise on it, let me know.
Yeah, the good it really works well. Very good program. Thank you, Sherry.
Okay, thank you.
How long do you have to have the tablet to do it?
Pardon?
How long do you have to have the tablet to do it?
Just a few minutes, actually. So if you want to make an appointment, give me a call, and I can work with Bob to set up a time for you to bring in your device. And
further questions? Okay, Mr. City Manager.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to defer my report till next meeting.
So granted. Calendars, any changes to the calendars? Okay, none. Any unfinished business? Any council new business? Hearing none, I would like to adjourn the meeting at 7:57. It's almost a record.